Hello, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. You're listening to Voice of Vashon, Vashon 101.9 KVSH LP. Hi, everybody. It's been a while. I've been gone for a while, and now I'm back. It feels good to be back in the saddle. And today, our guests are going to be Megan Hastings and Adam Cohn.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Megan. Hi, Adam.
Hey, guys. It's great to be here.
Welcome. I'm really glad you're here.
Thank you so much, Linda.
So for those of you who don't know, there's probably two people out there who don't know, who don't live on Vashon. Megan and Adam are our community pillars sometimes, and the owners of Snapdragon Vegetarian Restaurant and the wonderful Wild Mermaid that sits on the water for coffee and pastries.
It is true.
Some good food. So today we're going to talk about a lot of different things. Megan and Adam just got back from Ireland, and I would like for them to share some stories with us about what they found and
Absolutely.
Where they were. So how was
really
Ireland?
Great.
And welcome home.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we got back last Monday. It was great. It was a wonderful trip.
So tell me, for those of us who don't know Ireland, where were you?
Well, we were, if we think of kind of the small country of Ireland as sort of a center point, Dublin being the kind of eastern capital there, we were west of Dublin a couple of hours in the Wild and Woolly of County Mayo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can see it now.
There's different
the map,
counties.
But I don't know which county is where.
Right, exactly.
It's part of the Wild Atlantic Way.
It is wild there, I'm
it
assuming.
It actually really is wild.
The Seattle's fortunate in the last couple of years to have the Irish airline Aer Lingus has set up a direct flight from Seattle to Dublin, and it's an evening flight.
Oh,
and
nice.
So 10 hours get you there the next morning, and it's pretty splendid.
And you can sleep at
if you're inclined
it's
to sleep
an 8
on
p.m. Yeah. 8 p.m. flight, and you can you arrive in the morning and you kind of sleep the whole way.
That's really nice.
Yeah, and then you're ready to go. Ready to get some Guinness. Or a hot whiskey.
In the morning, whatever. Yeah.
Whatever makes you happy.
So, Megan, I know that you lived there when you were a teenager.
I did.
What have you seen a lot of changes? What have you seen that's
there
different
There are massive
now?
Changes from, well, that's a very long time ago, I'd like to say that. First off, it was like 1985.
Well, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, it was. But thank you. I spent my freshman year of high school there with family friends in County Longford in a little town called Lanesboro. Which is a beautiful flat area. It's not what you imagine when you think of Ireland.
Oh.
It's a little bit different, but the River Shannon does run through it, and Loch Ree, and it's beautiful. It butts up against County Roscommon.
There's peat bogs and a lot of unusual agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
I
very agricultural
about the peat
area.
Bogs. I would love to see them sometime. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about bog butter a while ago, Megan and I did, and I have to do some research on it, and I was hoping that we would know more about it, but we don't, so we have to do a bog butter.
We should have brought you home some bog.
Or
some
butter.
Sounds like the name of a grunge band from 30 years ago.
Bog
right?
butter.
Bog butter, right. Seaweed and bog butter, yeah.
Okay, moving right along. How's the food?
Well, the food is...
a marvelous question.
Yeah, very marvelous question. They have a lot of very small farms, which are great. And if you want organic local meats and cheeses, it's wonderful. You know, a lot of root vegetables. It's a lot of parsnip, a lot of rutabaga.
Mm-hmm. Do they
the
have
almighty
little,
potato.
Do they have little food stands like we do? Can you go directly to the farmer?
There are some
here and there.
I think in kind of the more
affluent
more developed
areas.
Counties or affluent, right? In the south, kind of around Cork and Galway, there's a food to table kind of like farm to table projects. Out in the Wild West where we are, we see it less, but still, you know, dairy is really a star.
Dairy,
I mean, amazing butters, amazing creams, things
amazing
that you just
it's
never
beautiful.
See that much here.
Yeah,
you know, I was doing some reading about early Irish cuisine. Cuisine before the Vikings came.
Right.
And, you know, potatoes have only been there 400 years.
Right.
So what did they eat before then? And I was able to find out that they ate milk.
Right.
They actually had milk that was not cheese exactly, but you could chew it. And I
wonder what kind of
the animals have been there a long
that would
time.
Be.
I'm trying.
Right.
Yeah.
The animal was there a long time, and with it comes the things that would be present.
So I want to do some research on that and find out what that is. But they were basically meat and dairy and seaweed and things like that.
Sure, that makes sense.
And then the potatoes came, and
And took over.
And took over, which, you know, there's a lot of potato lore and legend. Some people think that I've tried to figure out where the potatoes came from. And what they're saying is that the potatoes came from the Spanish galleons that were sailing around and that they brought them. And then
those galleons,
those ones, you know. And then there's another philosophy that they came from North America. And that's pretty, they couldn't have come from North America.
You mean like via Vikings or?
No, like via trade. When they came
when
up from,
finally became more
from South America, they came up and there was more passage back and forth. And potatoes sort of spilled off the decks, I guess.
Well, I'm glad that they did.
Well, I'm glad they did, too.
Well, it's an interesting provenance, that kind of thing, because I know even in Asia, like in China, the tomato is only a couple of hundred years old. In fact, the word for tomato in Mandarin is Western red vegetable. I mean, that
really?
Kind of Shi Hong.
Isn't that interesting?
But it's, so it's curious.
Will you
so
say that one more time?
I can't say it. Well, I can't get my tone right. But a Western red vegetable is the more of a description.
No, but I want to hear you say it in Chinese.
Shi Hong Shu.
Ooh,
that's
sexy.
Pretty good.
But yeah, potato. Right, exactly.
But we're going to go with that.
I really could have said eat your all of the donkeys.
And for those of you who don't know, I committed a faux pas here and I didn't introduce our engineer, Miss Susan McCabe, who's here. And
we
she'll
love
be
her.
Offering some witty remarks and sparkling conversation,
wonderful.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, so, and
she
I'll
should.
Turn on my mic the next
okay.
time I say something.
Oh, thank you. So,
so Linda, you were asking a minute ago what differences there were between, you know, Ireland of the mid-80s to where it is now. And it has gone through a massive, massive transition with, like, when I was there in the mid-80s, it was a pretty economically challenged country. You know, they really
the
did.
The troubles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But beside that, there was no industry. A lot, you know, there wasn't the industry that there is now. There's a lot of tech industry there now. Right. Companies like Facebook, Microsoft.
Yeah. Even early pioneers like
money.
Hewlett Packard, I think, were giant. Mm-hmm.
And really changed it, really changed the face of what it is. And there's a lot of different people that are there now.
So the culture's changing.
The culture's changing.
Right.
When the Celtic Tiger was big, a lot of people came over from Poland in particular and Lithuania.
Mm-hmm.
And they were construction workers, and they're there. And in all the small towns, there are little Polish shops. You can go in, get frozen pierogi, buckets of pickles. I mean, it's like you're not even there.
And
I mean, in Ireland.
And this
the
is
best
years
rye
after
bread.
Those building booms have kind of
Yeah, and the communities are still there.
Right. Well, and then to say nothing of the Indian food, which comes via England and
absolutely.
The Indian culture there, because it's just so good.
I have to say,
I personally
we
feel
do
that
eat a lot of
the Indian food is a lifesaver
there.
For us.
When you're in Ireland.
Absolutely. How many times can you eat at this one restaurant every
week? Although, you know, I could eat scones every day.
Yes, that's true. Scones, that. There are certain things at different times
of course.
Of day,
but maybe dinner's a different
I'm
thing.
I'm good with mashed potatoes every
well,
day, too.
Well, true. We could all do that, I think. But Megan, you... indicated that you discovered a new store when you were there this time.
Yeah, so there's this town called Ballyhaunis, which is it's in eastern County Mayo. It's like 15 minutes from my area where we stay, where we have
and right on the train line.
And
so
right on the train line, and
there's people come and go. Right.
It's called Ballyhaunis, but what it is it's the largest town that has Syrian immigrants, and so there are a lot of people there, refugees that are there. And there's a store that I love to go to when we're there. It's called Aleppo, and there's all these beautiful fetas and different spices. And I brought these cookie molds back. Well, I brought them back as gifts, but since we're here talking about it, I brought them in to show Linda. And they're I want to say the cookie is called, I think I could be pronouncing this wrong, so don't be offended anybody, but it's called like mamoul, and people make it during Ramadan. And so these are these wooden etched molds, and you put the cookie in, and there's a design, and then
they're
you pop
beautiful.
It out and you bake it, and they are just beautiful. So it's stuff like this, and they've got olive oil soaps, and it's unique for the area is what I'm trying to say.
Well, good for Ireland.
Yeah.
It's good for everybody,
yeah.
I think. Yeah, that's great. Well, you know what?
I remember, I know a lot of times I'm not really shopping when I'm in the store. I'm just kind of in there waiting with good naturedly for Megan, but watching the staff, watching the older people who who established this store are quiet, and they're reserved in a way that is polite. But their progeny, or their children, are gregarious and friendly, and come right up and start talking to you. And
with Irish accents. It's the sweetest thing.
And they're truly Irish. And when I asked them how long they've been, they said, "I've been here since I was 4 months old." And so what we have is a real cultural mix of people who are right there and present with their heart on their sleeve. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
I love it.
And I think it must be fascinating when you get into some personal relationships. You know, some immigrants and some locals, how their tables change.
Yeah.
Their dinner table changes when they've got such different spices and things to choose from.
Yeah, absolutely.
You found a good spices in the store?
Yeah, beautiful ones. Yeah. I brought tons of them back, actually.
That's a wonderful thing to have there. I'm really glad to hear that. I didn't know a thing about that. Back to a word we mentioned a little while ago, Adam, I'd like to talk about baking a little bit, you know.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Adam is a wonderful baker, and he bakes a lot of our most favorite things, and I have to drive by with blindfolders on sometimes because I could go in and eat everything in sight. But you started a long time ago. Tell us a little bit about what your beginnings of baking were.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I think probably what I could say... with assurance is as when we talked about scones was I began working as a baker in 1988 down in Pioneer Square near where I lived in the market at the Grand Central Bakery, which was begun by three ladies in the early 70s. And by around 88, when I came around, it was sort of just beginning to kind of get new life and a lot of the enthusiasm for rustic breads and pastries that came up from California, from the Bay Area, from Acme Breads and Nancy Silverton's La Brea project, Alice Waters, of course.
Oh, sure.
All of that renaissance that was kind of early middle 80s, by the time I kind of showed up on the scene at 18, 19 years old, was pretty exciting to be a part of.
I bet.
I was an art student, and I went to school at Cornish.
And he had long, flowing, curly hair.
I had long hair and dirty pants, and I was one of those people that needed to put themselves through school, and so baking was great because, you know, studio hours are long,
sure.
And baking, I could work early morning, which I was.
And
I was
it's also creative.
And creative, right. And it was sort of like so that's kind of how I started. And then just kind of, you know, college ended, but I enjoyed making scones, and so, yeah. In fact, there's an Irish soda bread scone, one that we're still in production with a real classic one with orange zest and caraway seed and currants. And that would be my one sort of nod in the direction of the Irish culinary thing.
So is that a recipe you developed?
It's a recipe from Grand Central Bakery that I've held on to all these years.
Okay.
So this would be 31 years that I've been making
that. That I stole,
right, when I left. And
So let's talk about scones.
Let's talk about scones.
What is a proper scone?
Well, you know, I think that's a great question. I mean, when I talk to the little guys, but really they're a very accomplished group of three young men that I work with at the bakery, because I can't do it all myself anymore. We talk about scones, and we talk about that this is really the standard of any bakery, are those, you know, are what would be called biscuit hands, like the capacity to clench or squeeze or render, you know, dry particles and wet particles in a way that is light and forgiving. Is not easy to do. I mean, it's right off.
No, I've never made a good scone.
And so I think really you just want to strike some kind of balance, like any kind of biscuit. You want to touch it as little as possible, but yet combine all the particles together. And that can be a challenge in a commercial environment where you're making large sort of mounds or discs of mix.
Well, it can be challenging in a home kitchen too.
It really can.
And I
be.
Say that I've never made a good scone. I have made scones.
Well, what do you think is what is it that, about your scone?
They're
you don't,
too crumbly.
They're too crumbly.
They're crumbly, and they're a little. I mean, they're nice in the middle, but they're too crumbly. They won't hold their shape well enough when you're eating them.
Well, you know, I think probably if there was one piece of great advice I could give is any kind of familiarity with any recipe, be it bread or a cake or something that you enjoy. I think, you know, our old business partner, Renee Morochek, used to laugh and say, "Oh, it's that same old chocolate cake you always make," and good naturedly. but that kind of familiarity, you know, you become confident. Recipes become like old friends, and ours certainly are. They're really more war horses than anything now because they perform well under duress.
War horse stone.
Yeah, right. You know, when anything else in the oven's failing, it's a good one. So I think that might be a good trick to scones. You know, just working with something and just, you know, like you said, you know, find what are the parts that you enjoy about it. Is it darker in the oven, you know, or lighter? Is it, you know, is there fruit or no fruit? Those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the key question for me, and a couple of other people asked me this.
Right.
What is the difference in the recipe that you use for a biscuit and a scone? They're so similar.
They are so similar. Megan, would you? Megan often makes biscuits in because she includes them in her retinue of things. So I think the sweet context is probably the what I would say is a biscuit is in generally less sweet. So you have a rising variation with So I think experiment.
I will experiment.
You should experiment.
We're going to take a little break right here. We'll be right back with Megan and Adam.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
VOV programming support is provided by Island Escrow, Vashon's only independent escrow company providing comprehensive service for all types of real estate transactions since 1979. On the web at islandescrow.net.
Hi, you're listening to Voice of Vashon and Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard.
And I'm Megan Hastings.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Adam.
Hello. It's great
and
to be here.
With us in the studio, we also have Miss Susan McCabe.
Hello.
And we are talking about all things Irish and food and bread and potatoes and those kinds of things. So, having just sort of delved into scones a little bit, there's way more to go with scones.
There's a lot, of course.
The Irish bread and all of that. And I know that, Megan, one of your favorite things is...
Brown bread.
Brown bread.
It is.
Okay, so first of all, I have to clarify, because I have friends, when I said we're going to talk about brown bread, they said, oh, the kind in cans. And I said that to you when you were talking about it. You mean the kind you steam in cans?
You know.
And Megan said, no.
Traditionally, they're not steamed in cans.
Yeah.
You form them, and they get formed into a round and cut into a cross.
Mm-hmm.
And then... have a little milk on it and then baked like that.
Does the cross have significance?
Well, it's a pretty Catholic country, Adam.
You know, interestingly enough, I just read something about that. And it said that there are some, you know, differing points of view about why that cross is there. And one of them is, yes, it's religious. And it means, you know, say your prayers and be a good person. And the other is that, well, it just makes it easier to break and serve.
It
does.
Well, it really does. It does. Whether or not you have a religious affiliation, you should definitely put the cross in the brown bread, because otherwise, I don't know how it's going to turn out.
It won't turn out.
It's going to be problematic.
Yeah, it will be.
Well, so
God will frown.
Got to consider an afterlife, and it's easy to share.
It's
on all levels.
So, Adam, do you bake brown bread?
I you know, I in fact do not. I
Adam in fact doesn't even
like
brown
goodness.
Bread.
Are you going to throw me under the bus?
I've
come to love this experience, which is the one item available in Ireland to enjoy alongside of soup, through my wife, who is she makes lovely brown bread, and I think that there's a lot of variations within it. You know, new word, treacle is an unusual
treacle,
which is molasses.
We got to try some treacle bread on this.
Yeah, there's
last
a
trip.
Variation of brown bread that was quite nice. We toasted with butter
really
and molasses
dark
has a heavy
and dense. It was
beautiful. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, they have a product in Canada similar to that Rogers Golden Syrup.
Yes, you're right. That's right.
Oh, it's just so good. I love it in there. It's not quite molasses, and it's certainly not honey.
There are so many variations.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what I think is.
And there are so many variations on the brown bread too. You can.
So, what do you like? What do you like to make when you make brown bread?
How you mean, like how do I like to make it?
Uh-huh.
I like to make it pretty traditional, but, you know, you can get wacky and add other things to it, like, I don't know, raisins.
I was going to say, did you ever put anything in it?
I don't. I make it pretty traditional.
Well, it's a pretty traditional bread. It's just slather it with butter and have it with your soup.
It's perfect. In fact, when I do the soup classes, I always include either like a brown bread or a soda bread, just because they're so easy. Anybody can make them and they're quick and they're, you can have them immediately.
You know, for an item that has the history that it does within this country, you know, just looking sometimes at the older homes and even places that we've stayed or visited, you'll often see these kind of hearth-like fireplaces with the swinging cast iron. And so I have a feeling, and I'm not sure, but I believe that this kind of item might have been baked in a cast iron
probably
over,
was.
Over
yeah.
you know,
it probably was.
A heated, you know, as opposed to, you know, the the larger affair of an oven proper. Mm-hmm. And so, because it does, there's something biscuit-like or scone-like about it.
Mm-hmm. Too, yeah, way, absolutely. You know? Right. When I was there for the year of high school, the woman that I lived with, well, the whole family, but her name is Josie O'Sullivan. And there was a cook stove that she would heat every morning with peat, mm-hmm. and then bake brown bread every morning. So we would have it fresh, hot, out of the oven. So I think, you know, I do like the flavor of it, but I also have like a real nostalgic spot
the
in
memory
my heart
of
it.
The
olfactory sensations are giant, especially when considered when we talk about peat for just a moment. Like this item, which is sort of harvested from the earth, sort of peeled away like sod, is dried, and then it has kind of like a sort of a grassy, inky smell when it burns, and it permeates the air. I mean, it's unmistakable upon landing in the country.
I think it sounds wonderful.
I love it. It's one of my favorite smells. But they're in the next couple of years, they kind of want to try and do away with it because it's dirty.
Ireland's trying to be more green.
It's for burning.
Coal,
right?
Yeah, for burning. But everybody burns it, and everybody has like a, you know, access to it.
It's convenient.
Most people will have like a plot of land, and they'll go out in the spring or summer, and they'll harvest the peat. Mm-hmm. And you can see it actually when we were just there. There were fields of it that people were digging up, and they stockpile it into little piles all throughout the fields, and then it dries out.
I just think that's amazing. It's really amazing to me.
It is. It's a very old process.
So one of the things with regard to Ireland is the bread baking and wheat, because wheat wasn't easily available in the early years.
Sure.
So there were a lot of potatoes. And what I was reading in a historic story the other day was that when they were inventing, if you will, boxty, the potato pancakey things, they didn't use flour at first, and now they do. Can you speak to that? Have you made boxty before?
I make it with great regularity, actually.
At the store, at the shop.
Snapdragon, But I always put flour in it, for sure.
You do.
Because it's what binds it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, wonder what they would have used prior. Like,
I know,
vehicle.
I don't know. Egg?
Just egg.
Yeah.
And they patted it and patted it. And so it probably
got the water out.
Yeah, get the water out. And it probably wasn't very full. You know, it wasn't puffy and big. And
no,
pretty.
They're pretty thin, actually.
Yeah.
Traditionally, they're very thin. Like, if you get them in a restaurant in Ireland, they're really thin.
So
I make mine a little fatter.
Is it like a cross between a hash brown and a, I don't know what. Is it sort of like?
No.
I don't know what boxty is.
So you do it. So boxty are traditional Irish pancakes from the West Coast and the Midlands. So like Mayo and Donegal and Longford, Roscommon, that whole area there. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they're called Mayo boxty.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I saw recipes for that. You found an interesting book in a thrift shop.
I did.
Yeah. Irish baking book, which is really, really interesting. I did find something interesting about boxty and how it was in the beginning. This is the earliest literary reference to boxty, and it came in 1804. Boxty was looked on as a rare feast, probably because there was white flour in it. There were no shop graters to grate the potatoes on them. Every house made its own grater by ripping a canister and punching holes in it. They had great feeds of boxty on turf cutting days and on the days of scouring flannel.
And on days of scouring flannel, there you have it.
Remember that? I mean, of course you don't. I don't either. But scouring flannel, they used to have to do that.
I don't even know what that means.
What is that?
It's a brushing and brushing and brushing of the cotton and make it into flour or flannel. And it's a lot of work.
Oh.
It's a lot of work. I looked up enough just to be dangerous about it, so I can't speak to it very intelligently.
I didn't even know that that's how it was made.
Scouring flannel was a chore that nobody wanted to do back in those days. So,
probably not today either.
No, I don't think so today either. So,
but it is very simple. So you take like leftover mashed potatoes. Potatoes are traditional with almost every dinner, and there will often be leftover, which you can either make fries with or chips or turn it into something like boxty. So you take like the mashed potato and some grated potato.
Combine the two.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a little milk. Some people add egg. I don't really add egg to it. I just add flour, and then I get crazy and I put green onions in it.
Oh, girl. That's not very authentic.
I know.
Well, I think we'll provide a recipe for box tea. I think it sounds really good and fun to make.
Yeah, I have one right here for you.
Oh, excellent.
Which you can put on your site.
That'll be great.
If you like.
I'd like to go back just a bit to baking again.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, we have the baker.
Well, we do have the baker here.
Yes.
Yeah. Along with practice, because
sure.
we know that's what it is.
Right.
When you are a person who would really love to make bread but can't seem to make anything but bricks.
Right.
Is it just practice? Following a recipe, practice? How do you find a recipe you can depend on?
Well, you know, I think, you know, maybe some real, you know, time-honored books or guides. I think, you know, Ed S.B. Brown's Tassajara Baking, you know, from the 60s is a great introduction to something that this would be that time before that sort of renaissance of artisan breads. And so there he is in his, you know, unusual, you know, spiritual, you know, center,
right.
Making bread with, you know, just with dry yeast and the flour is available and having a special time of it. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward process. So I would say the Tassajara bread baking is a classic beginning, you know, and the late Julia Child had an amazing series on PBS years ago now where it was Baking with Julia. And that there's a volume, that book Baking with Julia, I think, can articulate wonderfully, especially the potato bread.
It's a beautiful book.
It is a beautiful
Leslie
book.
Mackey, who also resides in the island, she from Macarena Bakery, she and I worked together a million years ago at Grand Central, and she's featured in that book. And then her potato bread from Macarena is, I think, a wonderful beginning loaf as well.
Okay.
And so I'd say that.
Well, maybe starting with potato, it's a little more forgiving.
It is forgiving, and it lends a caramely, resonant crust, and whether heavy or dark, it's delicious, you know?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Well, I have had a scone, and I've had cinnamon rolls, and I've had sticky buns, and I've had all those things down at the Wild Mermaid.
Yes.
And I understand that you know a few little tidbits about the Wild Mermaid that might interest our local listeners.
That is, I believe so. I think, you know, as far as kind of where we're going ahead, we've been working really hard. Even today, I bowed out from construction, and we're building the little bar Gabbiano, the seagull
lounge.
You are,
the seagull lounge.
It is really coming. I think by the end of this
water,
month,
it's all
by
water
summer,
there.
It's all about
so
the water.
Beautiful.
And birds and the shoreline, and we're
pretty
excited.
And the bar is coming along. It looks really beautiful.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
And then we'll have a broader menu and a lot of interesting things to enjoy seaside very soon, just in time for Vashon. Summer.
Talking about cross cultures, you know, I mean, I know you're thinking of Mediterranean food and you've
yes.
got all kinds of wonderful spices and herbs going on at Snapdragon.
We do.
And then we have these gorgeous pastries. I love what you do for the community and what you bring.
Thank you so much for coming. It was a real pleasure.
We're never finished. There's more to talk about.
Always.
And maybe we'll do that in a few
months.
We'll come back. But welcome home and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having
Top
us.
Top of the morning. Absolutely.
Sláinte.
Oh, wait, we're not ready yet. We can't go yet.
Oh.
Can we go now?
You can go now.
We can go now. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That was nice.